I'm happy now to welcome Martha Egan. She is an author, and her latest book is La Ranfla and Other New Mexico Stories. And she will be speaking this coming Friday, October 30th at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's wonderful to be here.
So you've written some novels. Now you've gone to short fiction. That's sort of the opposite direction than a lot of people do it, I think, isn't it?
Oh, really? Well, I've written stories over many years and never really tried to publish them or put them in contests or anything. And I realized that I did have a body of work, and there are the stories are specifically about New Mexico, set in New Mexico between the 1920s and present day. And curiously enough, there are a couple of themes that run through these stories. Not in every story, but
cars.
Yes. We love our cars in New Mexico.
Indeed we do. And La Ranfla is the word is basically a kind of word for car, or like my ride.
My ride, my classic car, the car that I spend weekends polishing. An older car, could be a low rider. And that term is not understood all over New Mexico among Spanish-speaking people. It actually is probably from the Pachuco era. But it is understood in parts of Mexico, and, you know, it's one of those terms that's kind of here and there.
And so cars is one of the themes in your stories. Now, when you say these were written over a period of years, the first takes place in, what, the late 60s or early 70s and starts in Berkeley, California during the classic era of war protest and everything over there,
yeah.
Ends up in New Mexico. Did you write that closer to that time?
No.
Okay.
I wrote that pretty recently, and I was never in California. I didn't go to Berkeley or anything like that. It's, you know, just pulled out of the air.
Right. Another theme that runs through them is dogs.
Yes. And one cat.
And one cat, yes. So as not to be entirely prejudiced against the lesser species.
Ooh!
It's an interesting process because these, I suppose when you live in northern New Mexico, these local things like dogs and cars and some of the other things, like blood relations is another theme, I think, just come up naturally as part of your writing. Whereas maybe, I suppose there are New York City books about dogs too, but they play more of a role here.
They do. I think, you know, I don't presently have any dogs, but or even a cat, but I have had in the past, and I think they're just a really important part of how we live here, and that's true in other parts of the country as well. But I don't know, you know, the dogs that I've run across here in New Mexico are really characters, real characters.
Well, and I think they can be a symbol for the anarchic and just untamable nature of this area, and by extension ourselves on some level too.
Sure. And there are companions and there are protectors, and they get us out walking on the ditch when we really don't feel like it, and, you know, things like that. Yeah.
One of your stories has a kind of standoff between a property owner and some people whom he basically traps and holds hostage in a cemetery because they opposed him on some little local political issue. And the web of connection among the various people, including the police officers and so on, who are called out to the scene, is really quite comical.
It is. It's fun. And I read it years ago in a much, much more primitive state to a group of people who are mostly from other parts of the country, not New Mexico. And their first comment after I read the story was, well, that's implausible. That can't happen. And I said, oh, yes, it can.
Well, were any of these based on true incidents? For example, that story? I mean, how close to life was that one, that incident?
The bones of it are based on something that actually happened that involved a relative of mine.
No more need be said.
No more need be said.
But that story is called Carnales. Maybe you want to read from it.
Sure. The villagers of Ojo Claro, New Mexico, would long recall with a mixture of outrage and bemused gusto that Procopio, Porky, Lucero, was the first sheriff's deputy to respond to the standoff at the cemetery that steamy Memorial Day afternoon. His wife was one of their own, but Porky, who was from Española, was an outsider. Who knew where his loyalties lay? Porky got the dispatcher's call while he was parked in the San Anselmo Casino parking lot, peeling back the paper on a microwave carne adobada burrito, his third of the day. He knew exactly where the Ojo Claro Cemetery was. His wife's ancestors were buried there. Setting the gumball machine twirling on top of his Crown Victoria, he zoomed down I-25 with his siren screaming and took the Ojo Claro exit. At a curve in the old highway that paralleled the interstate, he veered onto a dirt road that was more potholed than surface. The sedan bounded and swerved down the road like a drunken jackrabbit, skidding to a stop in front of the cemetery's high rock wall. There, a big, gutted, florid-faced man wearing a black suit and wide red tie stood pointing a gleaming 30-odd six at the couple dozen mostly old people inside the graveyard. A heavy chain was looped through the bars of the tall wrought iron gate, and an oversized padlock secured it. Porky leaned out the open window of his Crown Vic, draping his meaty hand over the side mirror. ¿Qué pasa, Joe? These people are trespassing on my land, the man yelled, gesturing with the barrel of his rifle at his captives, many of them barely tall enough to see over the stone wall that imprisoned them. Their faces as stony and chiseled as the headstones, the elderly cleanup crew had stopped chopping weeds to lean on their shovels and hoes and glare daggers at the man holding them hostage. Their dark, congealed communal anger contrasted sharply with the sunny holiday and the cheerful decorations on the mounds of their ancestors' graves. Multicolored silk and plastic flowers, some bright and new, some tattered and faded, adorned nearly every plot. Here and there, small, perky American flags fluttered in a light breeze. Put the gun down, Joe, Porky said wearily, pulling on his parking brake and turning off the motor. He unfolded himself from behind the steering wheel and got out of the car, tugging his belt up over his paunch. A siren's mounting crescendo announced the approach of another officer. Porky bent back into his car, retrieved his patrolman's cap, and jerked it down over his thick black hair. It could be his boss, Sheriff McDermott. Porky tucked in his gut in an attempt to look taller, hoisted his pants up again, and asserted his authority. Joe, he said, holding a hand toward the rifle as the sheriff drove up, gimme the gun. You know the cemetery's church property. This place has been a Campo Santo for 200-300 years.
Martha Egan reading from her new book, La Ranfla, and other New Mexico stories. You are from the Midwest?
Yes.
And came to New Mexico when you were in, what, your 20s?
No. Actually, I headed out of Wisconsin at 17, and went to school for a year and a half in Colorado, then transferred to Mexico, graduated from college in Mexico.
Then Mexico?
Yes, Mexico City. And then spent 2 years in Venezuela as a Peace Corps volunteer working with microlending. And then I went back to the States. I'm kind of old. That's why this takes a while to tell this story. I went back to the States, worked in Washington for a while, got completely disgusted, and next headed off for Europe on a bicycle trip, and I odd-jobbed and studied and did all kinds of things for a couple of years. And then I wanted to come back to the States, and I came to New Mexico. I'd been here briefly once, and I just thought it was very magical. And it, you know, has a different character than the rest of the country. I think it's there's more history here. There's the multicultural aspect, which really intrigues me, and just gorgeous countryside, just gorgeous.
And there's something else here, too, which I felt in a couple of your stories, which is the way people work out their problems with each other is unorthodox for people who come from elsewhere, and they have to get used to it.
You have to figure out how you get yourself fitted, how you fit into a culture that is not your culture. And I think that's been the difficulty for people for hundreds of years. How are you going to fit in? And the people who just sort of think that they can come here from someplace else and swagger in and think that the world is going to open up for them very quickly leave.
So what was your process like in figuring out how to fit in?
Well, I had some entree because my sister and her husband had been in New Mexico for a while, and they started Pachamama, and I went to work for them. And through the store, I met people who had continued to be good friends of mine. I also...
Pachamama being a store that sells a lot of imported things from Latin America.
Yes.
Here in Santa Fe.
Yeah, yeah. We started in Albuquerque, but opened the store here in Santa Fe in 1988, and then I closed the Albuquerque store. So that and just... I think I grew up in a family of 11 quarrelsome people. six brothers and two sisters. And I think, I've been thinking about this, I think you really have to learn pretty early on in a big family how you basically survive. you have to get along. You know right away that you are not the most important person in the whole world, but you also have to learn how to get what you want. And I think I did learn a lot about getting along, and I was in grade school classes with over 50 kids, some of whom did not speak English, some of whose families had just immigrated, and it's just part of the process. And also in Venezuela, you know, there I was working with microlending, but I had to get people's trust because I was handling their money. I had them handle the money as much as possible because it was just too fraught with danger not to do so. But there are certain ways of ingratiating yourself. And in the title story, for example, La Ranfla, this young woman from the Midwest who's followed her boyfriend to northern New Mexico wants to make friends with some of the people. And, of course, things were pretty hostile between newly arrived hippies and traditional populations in New Mexico in the 60s and 70s. I mean, really hot. Some wild stories out there. And she decides that one of the ways to do it is by making banana bread for a neighbor who has seemed to be approachable. And this woman, Felicia, and her husband, Arturo, end up being very, very helpful to this young couple. And this couple helps them. And I think that mutual, exchange of help and everything is how you can survive in a small community. People really need each other in small communities.
Yeah, that's the basis for how things work.
Yeah, yeah.
There is, among other themes in your book, no shortage of very nice young women and super cute boyfriends who come and go and sometimes stay and sometimes don't.
Yeah, I think the West has always been a good place for women, a tough place. But, and entrepreneurial women do well here. In the ranching era, you know, a lot of women's husbands died early because it was pretty dangerous work dealing with cattle and horses and critters and stuff. And women took over. And women have always been strong in the West by default. But also, I think the West attracts a certain type of woman. And the women in my stories are very strong women. Some of them have you know, learn the hard way that their boyfriends are not reliable. And women help each other out. But it's not, these are not really women's stories. I think they go across the gamut. And in fact, in the last story, which is called Granny, the main character is a young guy from the Midwest whose car breaks down on the border in southern New Mexico.
Right. And so that's the, I guess, the one story that doesn't take place in this part of the state. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, the stories take place in Albuquerque in northern New Mexico and that one story in southern New Mexico. But I think they will, the stories will resonate with people from all over New Mexico.
Now, that's a question that I wanted to ask you. They resonate with probably with people who are from all over New Mexico. What about the rest of the country? Do they have to kind of learn who we are through stories like this?
You know, in other parts of the country, New Mexico has a particular mystique. People are kind of fascinated by our state. People, you know, come here for vacations and fall in love with the place. Some people retire here from other parts of the country. I think there's an attractiveness. And I also think that while the color, I would call it the color and the characters in my stories are New Mexican and very typical of New Mexico, that the basic underlying truths will resonate with people in all parts of the country. But I'm and the book is distributed all over the country, and I just hope that you know, that fascination by New Mexico and the mystique will make it popular elsewhere.
I've been thinking recently about, I had a conversation with somebody about how it was hard for her to sell a very good book that took place in New Mexico because people at the big publishing houses considered it regional fiction. And I thought, well, everything is regional fiction. If you have a novel that takes place in the suburbs of Connecticut, that's regional fiction.
Yeah, but I think the most parochial place in the United States is New York City, and that's where most of the publishers are headquartered. There, you know, the publishing business is in a complete state of uproar, as far as I can tell. And I think part of it is that they rely on niching writers and what they're writing, and, you know, kind of look down their noses at what your friend found they termed regional fiction. But if it's good writing, I mean, I don't care if the story takes place in Africa or Asia or Manhattan, it will resonate with readers. It's truths, it's quality, and that's my story.
Martha Egan is author of 5 books. The latest one is called La Ranfla and Other New Mexico Stories. And once again, she will be speaking at Collected Works Bookstore this Friday, October 30th at 6 in the evening. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's been fun.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. You can find us podcast at the site santafe.radiocafe.org. You can listen to the show there any time of day or night, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Thanks to Sean Conlon for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, the Jazz Experience.